we're about to start Halacha Beis and Gimel. Halacha Beis is all about cheese, about making kosher cheese, and Gimel is a continuation sort of that. So rather than jump right into the din, we're going to talk today sort of an overview, an introduction to the, in general, to what goes on in dairies. We're going to barely do any halacha today. It's going to be almost completely introduction, just to understand what goes on. Just to put things into a little perspective and know where things fit, as we get deeper into dairy things, in Bay's particular, and a little even in halacha gimel. Okay, so before I say that, I have to just tell you that I don't know how much percentage, but a tremendous percentage of what I know about how dairies operate, and even more about halachas about dairies operate, comes from someone who you all know here, Zisha Blech, who's been deeply involved in this for many, many years. He wrote something many years ago, it's printed in at the end of a Davar Kashrus forever ago, called the Dairy Primer, which is really, it's really something. I know it's a little too early to say that, but we call it like a classic. It's really, really puts together the shilas and the mitzias, and it's really done very well. And he's been a tremendous resource. Even in the past couple of days, as I was working on this, I spoke with him more times about it, because he really knows a lot. He's really a person to know about it. So a lot of what you're going to hear, even if I don't say his name, is really coming from him. Okay, for what we're going to talk about. Okay, I'm going to break up what I'm going to say into four parts, which have to do, which are organized by the basic four things that are in a cup of milk. Okay, and they are, the first one is fat. Then comes protein. There are two kinds of protein in milk: casein and whey. Two kinds of protein. For those who are curious, cow's milk is that 80% casein and 20% whey. That's how this protein is broken down. The third group is going to be sugars, which in milk, the sugar is called lactose. Lactose is really what we call a disaccharide. It means it has two sugars attached to each other. It's not a single sugar. It's two sugars attached together. One is called galactose and one is called glucose. Anybody who wants to know the gory name, I want to put it up on the screen. There's a nice long name for what it's officially called. We call it lactose. And the last is going to be water and the other minor components that there are. Okay, so we're going to break it up into these four parts. And the first is fat. Okay, and that is when a person, 100 years ago, when you milked a cow, and you had got a container of milk, you let it sit still for a little while, the fat, the cream, would rise up to the top. And the milk, it's about 4% of the milk is fat or cream. Smetana is, we'll come to that in a second. It's the butter. We'll come to that in a second. But the cream, that cream rises to the top. So in most dairies, the first thing that happens when the milk shows up, when it shows up at the dairy, is it goes through this machine that we have here called the separator. Okay, it uses centrifugal force, and it removes the cream. Okay, they don't wait for it to happen naturally. In almost everything in dairy, the first thing that happens is they run through a separator. That is to say, even though they're going to sell some milk and cheese and all kinds of other products with cream in them, they don't leave it in there. They separate the cream out, and then they put it back in as needed. If this is going to be whole milk, they put in the full 4%. It's going to be skim milk, it's going to be this kind of cheese, or whatever it's going to be, they put the right amount of cream in.
4% of what?
4% of the amount of milk. The milk. The milk, when it comes out of the cow, it's 96% other things and 4% fat or cream. So when you give whole milk, that means milk with the full amount of fat that's supposed to be in there. But it's not
4% is half of the
amount of fat that's supposed to be in there. But the 4% that's in the whole milk is not the cream that came from this cow. The milk came into the farm, into the factory. They separated the cream from the rest of the milk, and then later on they mixed cream back in.
Oh, yeah.
Now, when it comes in, everything gets separated. And then, depending on, today we want to make more whole milk, or more skim milk, or more 2% milk, then they add it back in. That's like the standard way that it operates over there. And that's just for efficiency. They take all the cream off. Okay? The opposite is, when we buy milk nowadays, we don't buy milk like they had coming, from 100 years ago, that's how they got it. We get milk where the milk is what we call homogenized. That's what this machine is. It's a homogenizer. So it's not a great picture. It's a homogenizer. And a homogenizer beats the fat globules into such tiny particles that they stay in suspension. They don't float to the top. So when you buy milk, in our milk, you can sit there all day. It's not going to float to the top. By the time it starts to float to the top, it's been spoiled. Okay? In other words, it takes a long time before the molecules will start to get back together and float to the top. By that time, you won't be drinking the milk anyhow. So we, the milk, the fluid milk that we get, the bottles of milk that we get, are homogenized, means they made it in such a way that the cream does not separate from the fat. Okay? But anyhow, back to the regular, in a regular dairy, the first thing that happens is, you separate it, and the milk, and the cream is separated out of the liquid. That cream that comes out is called cream. That's what they call that fat that comes out is called cream. When it comes out of straight milk, when it comes right out of the milk, it's called sweet cream or whipping cream. Okay, that's what comes right out of the milk, fresh out of the milk, is called whipping cream. It doesn't have, it has almost no kosher concerns with it. What we're calling sweet cream has almost no kosher concerns. The milk comes in, it gets separated, it's almost as pure as it could be. In contrast, okay, we'll get to in a second. Okay. When this cream is, if you take cream, just pure cream, and you beat it, okay, what do you call it? You say you whip it, okay, you beat it, for a long time, it becomes a whip. If you keep on beating it, you churn it, then what happens is that cream separates into two parts. One part is like, if you keep on past whipping it to the point where we say you churned it, it comes to that point, it separates into two parts. One is a drier, clumpier, piecier thing, and the other one is a liquid. The clumpy part, the solids, that part, if you then squeeze them out, so then all the liquid gets out, that's butter. Once you've turned it to that point, you remove this liquid, it solidifies until it becomes more like crumbly and dry and solid. Those pieces stuck together, that's butter. Okay, so it's churned cream is what you make butter out of.
How do you churn that?
You just whip it up. Okay, you just... You just take the cream out, and now you churn that up. If you churn it, your wife has done this to make whip. Well, maybe not with milk, but with other things, with other fats to make a whip, like for a cake. But if you keep on going with milk, you'll get what we call butter. Okay, you keep on churning it to the point that you beat it so much it separates into two parts. It's like what they do with chocolate. When you beat it enough, you separate it into cocoa butter and cocoa liquor, or cocoa powder. So here you separate again two things. One is the butter. The leftover is called buttermilk. Okay, the part that comes out, the liquid that gets separated out of it is called buttermilk. Okay? Now, when I say that thing is called buttermilk, that's the traditional buttermilk. Okay, it's called buttermilk. It's the milky-like substance that comes out when you make butter. Okay, it's not butter. That's where the word buttermilk comes from. It's a milky-like substance that comes, and that's what's used commercially. If you go into a factory and they're using buttermilk, that's probably what they're using. If you go to the supermarket and you buy buttermilk, it has a different thing. It has nothing, no shyness. Nowadays, when you buy buttermilk in the store, that is just milk. That's cultured. They add, we'll get to cultured milk a little later, they add bacteria, something to it, which does something to the milk and changes its form. We'll get a little more to that in a second. What you buy in the store nowadays, if you walk in the store and say, I want to buy some buttermilk, you're not buying the traditional buttermilk. It was never made from butter.
What is the store?
People eat it. They use it as an ingredient. But the traditional buttermilk, that traditional buttermilk, is the leftover liquid from churning a butter. That leftover liquid is called buttermilk. Okay. So that's how you make, what I just told you, how you make the best butter, the highest quality butter, comes from sweet cream. Okay. You can also make butter from another kind of cream, which we're going to talk about a little later in the next section, which is called whey cream. Okay. What I just told you was what's called sweet cream. It takes it right when you bring the milk in, you right away separate out the cream. That's the higher quality cream. There's a lower quality cream, which is called whey cream. We'll talk about that in a second. That has much more serious shyness to it. I told you the sweet cream that has very little shyness to it, very simple and very innocuous from a kosher perspective. But the whey cream, which can also be used to make butter, you can also make butter out of it, has much more serious shyness to it. Okay. It's a little, you might not expect this, but the lower quality butter is the better tasting butter. Okay? So even though I said to you the higher quality is made from the sweet cream, the better tasting butter is the lower quality butter. I know that sounds a little strange. Anyhow, so the butter also has other things that add to it. Other things to give flavor to it, especially to compensate when you have a higher quality butter which doesn't taste as good, starter distillate and the acid, there are other things that are added to it. We're going to talk about whether butter needs to be Chol V'Yisrael or Gvinis Yisrael. That's going to be in Halacha Gimel. The halacha gimel is about butter, and whether it needs to have the din mechol of Yisrael and kinyanis Yisrael, which is what our siman is about, that's going to be for that. That, I mean, we would look at it, we would guess that it would need mechol of Yisrael, okay, but we'll talk about it when we get to halacha gimel, about whether it does, whether it needs either of those things. Okay. Aside from butter and milk, there's a couple other things you can make as a byproduct of this thing. Two of them are butter oil or anhydrous milk fat, we'll call AMF also, and that is when you take butter and you take off the fatty, everything aside from the fat, you leave just the fat, that's a certain thing. And also you could also take butter oil and you could add lipase to it. Lipase is an enzyme that comes from animals' throats. It's an enzyme that they have in there, which starts to digest the fat. That's called LBO, or lipolyzed butter oil. That's one thing you make it. And then one of the flavor
butter oil
is the everything. It's just the fat part of the
cookout
oil, right? And if you remove everything except for the fat, but you could also put lipase into that if you want it. That changes the taste of it by adding this lipase to it. So it's called LBO, or lipolyzed butter oil. Okay. Obviously that's sensitive because lipase basically is trans. I mean, you can make kosher, but that's not for now, but there are those who make it kosher who, not everyone agrees with how they make it, but there is such a thing as kosher lipase out there in the market. What? There's, okay, we don't have to say their name. Who does it? Okay. Now, one of the components in butter that has a lot to do with the taste that it has, or the desirable taste to it, is called butyric acid. And if you get a natural one, it could come from butter. That's where you would get it from naturally. And people who use it to create butter-like taste to it, because that's what people associate with that taste. But Derech Klal, it comes from synthetic sources. And it's assumed that if someone's selling it as plain, they're not selling it as a natural product, that it's not the natural one, and it's not a kosher product.
Enteric acid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen natural?
I don't remember. The natural one would be suspected of coming from butter. That would be the suspicion that that's where it comes from. That would be the suspicion where it comes from. But usually it's not. If you just eat plain, there's only...
listed in sequel.
Okay. Yep, look. Okay. One last thing in here, which is just like an exception. You might be thinking this, which is ice cream is not really made, so to speak, from cream. Ice cream is made from milk, something with a very high milk content. It also has to have a lot of cream to it. By law, it's, I think, over 10%. It's usually between 10 and 16% cream to it. So it has cream added to it. It's not plain milk. And it has all kinds of other chazerai added to it, other kosher-sensitive ingredients, like emulsifiers added to it. And what they do is they freeze it. But when they freeze it, they stir it while it's being frozen to help get extra air into it to give it a fluffiness. And so it's a frozen milk with a high fat content, and of course it's hashgacha, but it's not. It does contain cream. By law, it actually has to contain a lot of cream, but it doesn't. But it's not cream per se. Okay, it's not like butter, which is just cream. Ice cream is made from really plain milk with all kinds of other chazerai.
Why does the government mix in?
The government doesn't. When the government does these things, they're not mixing in to say it's like right or wrong. It's that people expect a certain thing, so they're just establishing. Everybody assumes it has a certain amount of fat, so it's not honest to consumers. If you would call something ice cream, you could call it frozen. Right, so it's just you could call it a frozen confection. You just can't call it ice cream. People expect a certain thing, so they just put into law what people expect. That's all. Nothing more than that. Okay, so that's our first section. We talked about the fat. The second section, which is much more right into what we negate us, is the protein. Okay, I said the second part of what in the milk is the protein. And as I told you about fat, it's easy to remove fat from milk. Okay, first thing you do, you remove the fat out of the milk. That's easy. Okay, almost as easy, or what's very commonly done is to remove the protein from the milk also. I don't mean all the protein, the casein protein out of the milk. And that is done in one of two ways. There's probably just chazon shashi, you probably know this. There's two ways to do this. One is using rennet and one is using acid. Okay, there are two ways to get the casein protein to come out of the milk. Those two ways of doing it are very different from each other. The result is the same, that the casein protein is now out of the milk, but they work very differently. Rennet is what's called a protease enzyme. I mean, it's an enzyme that works on proteins. Okay, so rennet works by breaking apart, by changing the structure of part of the casein. It's called the kappa casein. I don't know what that means. But anyway, it's one part of the casein. It affects the kappa casein. And because of that, the casein molecule is all affected. It's all not the way it's supposed to be. Falls out of the milk. Okay? That's how rennet affects milk, how it causes the casein to fall out. It if you could use the word, breaks one of the parts of the casein, the kappa casein, that part of the molecule, and then the whole thing is not stable and falls out. The other one is that acid casein is as follows. Casein, be'etzem, pure casein does not dissolve in milk. Does not say it's not soluble in milk. When casein is in a casein salt, okay, then it is soluble. So when casein is the way it is in milk, it's calcium caseinate. When it's mixed in the milk as such, it's happy and it stays mixed into the milk. By adding in acid, by turning the milk too acidic, below 4.6, it's a fancy word, it's called the isoelectric point. If it goes below 4.6, below 4.6 pH, the calcium caseinate breaks apart, leaving calcium and casein separate from each other. Casein is not soluble, it falls out of the solution. Okay. So we have these two different ways of getting the casein out of the milk. How do you make the milk acidic? I told you could do it with rennet. Okay, so somebody pours in rennet. How do you make the milk acidic to get the casein to fall out of it? So the simplest way to do it is to do nothing. Okay. I'm sorry, take that back. That's not simple. The simplest way to do it is to add acid to it. Okay, you put lemon juice into it, or vinegar, or an industrial kind of acid into it. Okay, I know people who do that. They take milk, pour in lemon juice, and they have cottage cheese. Okay, you put in the right amount of acid into it, and it'll separate itself. You can do it at home. Okay, you put it in. What?
It works in fast
rifle? Yeah, it works anything. Different difference. Put it in the. We should have done a demonstration. Keep everybody awake here. Put in enough acid into it. Lowers the acidity to below 4.6, and out you go. Out will pop the casein. Okay. Another way you could do it.
You get casein. You get butter.
No, the casein, the protein. We're getting at the protein out. The butter. We finished with the cream. Now we're just getting at the. Now we're getting at just the. Just, we want to get out the. If you want to get the protein, by making it acidic, will cause the.
pH.
Lower the pH, causes the caseinate to break apart, causes the casein to fall out. Another thing is, you could just leave it on the counter. Okay? If you leave milk on the counter, what's going on when you leave milk on the counter is, bacteria start to work on the milk, they start to eat the milk. A byproduct of almost every living function is lactic acid is produced. It's a byproduct of the bacteria working, eating your milk, is that it produces lactic acid. The lactic acid sours the milk, meaning it lowers the pH to below 4.6. As soon as the pH gets below 4.6, ta-ta, out falls the casein. Okay, so the reason why, when you sour the milk, it turns into what looks like cottage cheese is because that's exactly what's happening. The bacteria that's eating the thing, the bacteria is not creating the cottage cheese. Bacteria is creating lactic acid. Lactic acid is making it too acidic, out comes the protein. The protein is blood. Well, your only reason you might not be able to eat it is because maybe the bacteria that was eating it did something harmful to the milk beforehand. I'm not saying that you should eat it. I'm saying, but if you want to see the protein come out, so the simple way, I can't answer that question, if it is or not healthy to eat it, but that could happen like that. You could speed that up. Commercially, they don't do that. They don't sit in a tank and say, okay, let's just leave the milk out here for a week and wait for it to sour. What they do is they add their own bacteria. Okay, we call those cultures. Okay, they add their own bacteria to the milk. That bacteria, they don't wait for it to fall from the atmosphere. They put in a specific one into the milk. It starts eating, you know, and living, and doing what it has to do. Out comes lactic acid, ta-ta, the protein falls out.
But they keep, what is, when you go to a dairy?
It's a culture. It's a
starter or something.
A starter culture, same thing. Starter culture. So the cultures are added to, the cultures have this effect. Now, cultures is a whole science to which culture you put into things. Okay, there are many different ones that have all kinds of different properties to it. For these kind of cheeses, it's not as important. For the rennet ones, people add cultures when they're going to use rennet also, because the cultures have effects on the taste. It has to do with temperatures, all kinds of cheshbonim says. So I'm telling you, you add culture if you wanted to create an acid cheese, which is true. The culture is what makes the acidity, which creates the cheese. But people add it to the rennet cheeses also. The rennet. But they want to remove the casein through rennet also. Okay. Anyhow, at this point, we're equal. We're sort of equal. Whether you added rennet or you added acid, yeah, the casein is falling out of the milk. Okay, now, both of these methods could be used in themselves in two different ways. But both of them could be used in two different ways. One is to make casein, and one is to make cheese. Okay, those two things are very similar, but they're not the same. If you got the casein out of milk that has no fat to it, okay, you took fat-free milk, remember, you took out the cream first, and you have fat-free milk, and you get acid to it or rennet to it, what's going to come out is going to be casein. What you're going to get after you get the acid or the rennet is going to be plain old casein. And either you're going to call that acid casein or you're going to call it rennet casein. But what's going to come out is going to be just pure, plain old protein called casein. Okay. Now, I'll just throw... What?
The liquid?
It comes out as a solid, but it comes out as a more solid looking than milk does, like a soft, cheesy kind of thing. Where you could turn it into a powder, that's separate. But it comes out as, it's coming out, it's like a cheesy kind of thing. Okay, now, I'm going to throw in something over here. Robert Bloch's insight into this, which is, he said, if you remember what I told you, when you make rennet casein, that works by breaking the cap of casein, breaking part of the casein, force it out of the milk. Acid casein, the whole casein came up as is pure. So he says, it's not possible to turn rennet casein into acid casein. Acid casein has almost no shadows to it, and rennet casein needs convenience as well. But you can't make rennet casein into acid casein. Rennet casein is, so to speak, broken. It can't be repaired and turned into acid casein. Okay, so you don't have to be concerned that acid casein is really rennet casein. It doesn't work like that. You can't turn one into the other. Okay, anyhow, back to where we were. So if you used milk that had no...
Do they have different applications?
Yes, they're different birds.
For example?
I don't know. They use four different things. But they're not the same structure. They're both called casein. But one came from acid, one came from rennet. Well, through acid or rennet, they have different... The finished product is not the same thing. Now, if you remove the casein from milk that has fat in it, what happens is when the casein falls out, it doesn't come out by itself. It entraps the milk that's in... the fat that's in the milk. So if you pull out casein out of milk that has fat in it, then you don't get casein. Then you get cheese. Okay, cheese is when you pull out the casein, but casein that entraps fat inside of it, and now what you've pulled out, we don't call that casein anymore. We call that cheese. Cheese is really casein with fat mixed into it. Or casein holding in like a lattice of holding on the fat that's inside of it. Okay, so the difference between acid casein and acid cheese, acid said cheese and acid casein, is that acid casein is pure. It's just the casein of it. Acid cheese means when you pulled out that casein, it came out with, it pulled fat with it, and it created something that we call cheese. Okay, when you make it from acid, we call that a soft cheese. We call it acid-set cheese or a soft cheese, like a baker's cheese, a cottage cheese, cream cheese, farmer cheese. Those are all soft cheeses. Okay, those are created by adding, by acidifying, by souring the milk. Now, all those that I just mentioned, some of them, Zisha told me that some of them are just caseins, and some of them are actually cheeses. But anyhow, I call them all cheeses, okay? And if you use rennet to pull out the casein, and there's fat in there also, you get all kinds of cheeses. These are the cheeses, different kinds of what we call the hard cheeses. Cheddar cheese, and Gouda cheese, and Monterey Jack, and mozzarella, and Parmesan, and Munster cheeses. All those are all hard cheeses. That means to say is the casein was pulled out with rennet. That's how you got the rennet to separate. There was fat in the milk also, so when it fell out, it encapsulated this fat into it, and it makes these cheeses, okay? So, what's the difference between all those? I just told you there's 99 different kinds of rennet-set hard cheeses. What's the difference between all of them? Okay, the difference is in details that I'm not going to get to us right now, like which culture you used, what temperature you did it at, how much moisture you took out of it, how long you aged it, for all kinds of other side points, which are very negative. It's very important, and we hopefully get to them as we move on the halachas, but for right now, it's not so important. They're all cheese. Okay, all those things are what we call hard cheese. And what the important din that there is for cheese is that when you make cheese, it needs to be green as usual. Okay, that's the halacha. That's halacha base.
Is hard cheese the 6-hour thing?
No. When I say soft and hard over here, I'm sorry, I should have clarified that. When I say soft and hard over here, I mean is soft cheese is acid set cheese, hard cheese is rennet set cheese. Some of those hard cheeses are, so to speak, so hard that you have to wait 6 hours. That's not what I was talking about. I meant as hard as in, there's a separation. They're different breeds from one another. Okay, so cheese needs to have convenience as well. You have to do something. There's some participation that Yid has to have. There has to be somewhat involved in making cheese. That's going to be halacha base. Is what does that mean? What does he have to do? When does he have to do it? For which cheese? Is it only for the hard cheese? Or is it for the soft cheese also? All kinds of shaila about how you make hard cheese. That's what halacha base is about. Is what does it mean? What does it mean that you have to have gvinis yisrael? But something needs gvinis yisrael, and it's assumed that that thing that I told you, that gvinis yisrael, that you need gvinis yisrael, is for casein also. Remember, casein and cheese are not really the same thing. Casein is just the protein part of it, and cheese is the protein wrapped around the fat of it. It's assumed that you need gvinis yisrael for both. Okay. After you make this cheese, you pulled out the casein, or you pulled out the casein with the fat to make cheese. One, you made the casein with it. Whichever one you made, there's leftover liquid. Okay? That leftover liquid is called? Whey. That leftover liquid is called whey. We assume, I hear that there are those who argue, we assume that whey does not need to be gvinis yisrael. But even though the whey doesn't actually need to be gvinis yisrael, the whey, you realize it's been in contact with the cheese, right? It was just with the cheese a second ago, and it has
something else.
What? Is I don't believe so. No. You're talking about whether it has bleus of gvina, that it should be itself gvina. No, that's a there is such a shita. That's not our shita. No. Your question has to do with the other thing, which is the whey, which Brian is about to say. The whey is so close to the cheese. It's made together with the cheese. It has so many places in the factory where it crosses bands.
So
there are questions of even it itself doesn't need to be gvinis yisrael, but it has bleus of gvinis yisrael.
Even if it's cold, doesn't it?
Right. Well, that's all kinds of trials. I'm just opening your eyes that there's such a possibility. It doesn't need to be gvinis yisrael, but it has potential to be contaminated or to be balua from gvinis yisrael, and that's why it has this. Okay. A few little exceptions over here is when you make the whey, it's called whey because the most prominent component of that liquid that's left over is the whey protein. Okay? Casein is the main protein that's in milk. That's what you make cheese out of, and you make rennet, you make casein out of. But the important component left in the liquid is whey protein. Okay, so from that liquid that's left over, the whey that's left over, you can make whey protein. You could spray dry it to make whey powder. You could skim off, cream off of that. That's called whey cream. We talked about before that you can make butter out of that stuff. That's called whey cream. You can skim off some of the little fat that's left over. And you can make a cheese out of that. Okay, there's a cheese called ricotta cheese that you make out of whey protein. Not out of casein protein. You make it out of whey protein. That's called ricotta cheese. Mentioned it for halacha gimel also. Okay, what the din of that cheese is. It's not regular cheese. It's not made out of casein protein. It's made out of whey protein. That's mentioned for halacha gimel also. It's not your regular thing. Okay. Some of the exceptions to the cheeses that I told you is cottage cheese. Cottage cheese, which is made by acidifying the milk. You sour the milk to cause the casein to fall out of it. But the way they used to make it was, almost every cheese is made is that you pull out the protein, and then you eat just the protein part of it, or the protein with the fat. Cottage cheese, what they would do is they would mix it back in with the liquid. Okay, or everybody's heard of, you know, Little Miss Muffet, who ate her curds and whey. Her curds and whey was the curd, that's the protein part of it, and the whey is the liquid left over. She was eating cottage cheese. Okay, so when you take the curd, you mix it back into the whey, and now you have the solids floating around with the liquids inside of it. That's cottage cheese. Okay, that's different than most cheeses. Most cheeses, you eat just the curd part of it, just the protein part of it. Nowadays, they don't make cottage cheese like that, for your information. Nowadays, they take out the protein, and they make a separate liquid that they put onto it. They don't put the whey back into it. But that's how you're supposed to make it, or that's how they used to make it. Okay, and another exception is yogurt, sour cream, which are very similar, which is all other cheeses are made by pulling out the protein. You pull out the casein, either with or without fat. With fat, you pull it out. Yogurt is you just culture the milk and you solidify. The whole milk turns into yogurt or sour cream. It's not made by pulling out casein. It's not really a cheese in the sense. That's also Mr. Shem Halacha Gimel. What's the status of yogurts and sour cream? They're not like regular cheeses. A regular cheese, you pull out the protein and the fat to make something separated and you leave the liquid behind. But when you make yogurt, you don't do that. When you make yogurt, the whole milk turns into that. It solidifies and congeals. It doesn't separate pieces out that become cheese to leave behind the whey. Okay, that's a mitzvah of halacha gimel also. What's the status of that thing? What do you do with that kind of is that really a cheese? Does that have, what kind of din does that have? Okay. In the next section, we're getting towards the end now. We're a little over time, but a little towards the end. Okay. Third section is the sugar. Okay, we did the fat and the protein, and now the sugar. When you pull out the protein, the casein to make the cheese or the casein. What you're left behind is what I said is the whey. That whey, the main component that most, the most prominent component in there is the whey protein, and that's why it's, that's why the liquid is called liquid whey, because the, this prominent component is whey. There's another component in there is the lactose. The lactose is in that liquid. So, you can filter that liquid to get the lactose out of it. Okay, when you filter the liquid, the whey stays behind, and the lactose passes through. Okay, so, or in the days of a Chazal, in the Rosh brings it, they used to cook it to separate the whey would separate, and the liquids, the other liquids would go out. There is a separation you could do to the liquid whey. Okay, that separation to get the protein to go one way, the whey protein to go one way, and the water and the sugar to go a different way. So, the Gemara says in Chulin, that there's something called mei chalav, and mei chalav is midoraisa not considered milchiks. Okay, so it's a machlokes rishonim what that means mei chalav. It's really going to be able to eat in halach in simin pei zayin or pei aleph, depending on the mood. Either pei zayin or pei aleph. That's where the Shulchan Aruch talks about that. What is mei chalav? Some hold mei chalav means whey. It's the liquid that comes out of milk. When you make cheese, the liquid that gets left over is called whey. So some rishonim hold that that's considered. That's only milchiks midrabanan. And some rishonim hold that mei chalav is after you take whey and you either cook it or you filter it, the liquid that's left over there, that liquid is the mei chalav. The first, the whey, that's milchiks midraisa. Only the second liquid is mei chalav, which is the drabanan.
How can you cook something and have it heated and then it's mixed with something else that has a status?
It's a very good question. Mr. Shem, we'll get to that soon. It's a very good question. How can it be? I cooked it together. How can it be that the water is not milchiks and the thing that came out is milchiks and the water is not? It's a very good question. Mr. Shem, for that. You have to stay around till then. Okay. So whey, we are machmir to treat whey as if it is milchiks mitaraisa. But the liquid that comes out of the whey, if we filter the whey and we get this, we filter out this, the liquid that comes through, that everyone holds only milchiks mitarabana. In that liquid is the lactose. The sugar, the milk sugar is in that liquid. So therefore lactose, everybody holds that lactose is only milk that's mitrabanan. Okay. No question that lactose is only milk that's mitrabanan. It's a shaila whether whey is milk that's mitrabanan. We assume that it's milk that's mitaraisa. But everyone agrees that lactose is only milk that's mitrabanan. And you say, who cares? So Mr. Shem, when we do Simon Pesach, we'll find that there's all kinds of practical applications to the fact that lactose is only milchiks and drabanan. Okay? You would say, who cares? But the milchiks is milchiks. That's the Gemara's, yes, the Gemara's not meaning that you could cook it with meat. Yes, but that's not, for most people, what are they going to do? They cook with meat. But we'll find out. We get to Pesach. There's a whole bunch of nafkaminas to that being. Okay. Before we wind this part down, this lactose has a number of different kinds of uses. Where you could end up seeing it. One is, I told you that lactose is really a disaccharide. It's made of two sugars. One of them is glucose. That's used all over the place. Okay, that's not what, no one, it's not, that's one thing. But what's unusual to lactose is the other sugar, which was, it's called galactose. Okay, that's the other sugar is called the galactose sugar. So lactose is a made up word, which means it's the combination of glucose and galactose. Galactose is what's used to make a sweetener. A low-calorie sweetener called tagatose. Tagatose is a low-calorie sweetener, which would be not so significant, except that it has a very big yichus that is used for making diet slurpees. Okay, for whatever reason, diet artificial the low-calorie sweeteners don't work well in a slurpee machine. For whatever reason, they don't get that consistency for some reason, but tagatose does. So tagatose is the low-calorie sweetener used to make diet slurpees. That's why diet slurpees are milchiks, okay? Because they're made from galactose. They're made from tagatose, which is made from galactose, which is made from lactose, which is made from whey, which is made from milk. Which is made from milk.
No, is this available in the retail market?
You go to 7-Eleven. You get it?
No.
Oh, could you buy tagatose? I don't know.
I don't know.
Is it sold as a...
Is the Pound Club selling?
No, it's milchiks. It's milchiks with
milk.
It's
milk. It's milk. Someone's not going to call yourself. You should not drink diet slurpees.
Well, he shouldn't drink it. Wait a second, he shouldn't drink it. It's milchiks. So people who are not going to wouldn't eat things that are milchiks because they say not chavisol. Yeah. So they don't sell it in the kosher one.
No, they don't have it.
Maybe there are newer ways. Maybe there are newer ways that they could sweeten it. That's my understanding that they use this tag. Okay, anyhow. So that's the yichus of a place where we might see a lactose. Okay. Another thing is that there are certain countries that have tremendous dairy industries. The ones that come to mind, the most famous ones, are New Zealand and Ireland. They have huge dairy industries. In these countries, there's such a big dairy industry, they have loads of whey, and therefore they have loads of lactose. Okay, they have all this lactose, so for them, lactose is just another sugar. Okay? Whereas for us, we wouldn't use lactose just as a plain old sugar. They would use lactose because it's a cheap sugar to be used for fermentations. So if they want to make MSG in one of these places, or citric acid, they're looking for our sugar. We would use sugar coming from corn. For them, that's just a cheap sugar that's available. So it's used for fermentations in some of these places just because it's just cheap. Because in certain places, that's what it's just around. These countries, they have leftover, they turn it into alcohol. And they'll turn the alcohol, and there's a vodka that's made out of, it's made out of milk sugar. That means is, they went to a place where they put lactose. They turned the lactose, like any other sugar, could turn into alcohol, which could turn into, and you make schnapps out of it, you make vodka out of it. So in some countries they're using it because it's just cheap, okay? Or it's being used, sometimes people use it because they want certain properties of milk. For example, we had a company that we used to certify that was making diacetyl out of lactose. Okay, diacetyl is something that gives a buttery kind of a flavor to it. They give a buttery kind of a flavor. They wanted certain notes to carry over. They could have used any sugar to make diacetyl. They wanted to use a milk sugar, badafka, because they thought it would carry over certain notes of the milkiness of it also. It wouldn't be just plain diacetyl, but diacetyl with other components of the milk that would have a certain taste to it. So they were using the milk sugar on purpose. They weren't using it because it was convenient. There was a reason why they wanted it. We have a company now that also ferments flavor enhancers, and they use whey. Now, they're really not using whey. Really, they're using the lactose. They put in whey, but the only part that's fermenting is the lactose. The whey doesn't ferment. The part that ferments is the lactose sugar that's in there. Why they use the lactose is a story, just a historical. But they don't. They're using it. They have a thing why they want to use whey. Okay. And for some reason, I haven't gotten 100% around this, a lot of tablets seem to have lactose in them. Pills, like, that people swallow. For some reason, I'm not sure exactly why. Okay, anyhow, some of these parts of lactose are going to be, again, for Simon Pezai, and we'll talk about the bus poll. That's for that, okay. Last part that we have to do, we're almost done. We're over time, I'm sorry. Last thing we have to do is the water and the mining components. The mining components is mainly, we talk about calcium, like calcium casein. But the water is the last thing that's left. We took out the fat and the protein, and the sugar, and maybe someone even pulled out the calcium. It's not common to get it, but even let's say someone pulled out the calcium, what's left is water. And I'll just mention it, is that in a dairy company, when they have certain products, and they have whey, so what do? They want to remove the liquid so they can sell powdered whey. Or they want to remove the liquid so they have just the lactose. Or they want to remove the liquid so they can get concentrated milk. Okay, they want to make, evaporated milk. Okay, all these things, they want to remove liquid. So the simple view would be is they would remove the liquid, and that would be the end of it. Okay, but the truth is that in efficient companies, they capture that liquid that they evaporate off. As they boil out that liquid, they capture that liquid. Why waste the water? Okay, and they capture that water, and that's called, it has a term, it's called cow water. Okay, that water that's boiled out, that's captured, it's called cow water because it's water, but it has certain carryovers from the milk, so it's not pure water exactly, they call it cow water. And what they do is, what do they do with cow water? So one company, they water their lawns with it. Okay? Well, wonderful. Okay, so they water their lawns with it. No problem. But other companies use that water for cleaning. Now, they wouldn't use it for a final cleaning because it has contamination to it. It has milk carried over into it. But they would happily use it to do a first rinse on something. They would use that water. There was unfortunately a company that after many years, the Mashgiach realized, they were kashering with the cow water. They're catching from milk to paru using milk water. Okay, that water is milk, okay? So only... It may or may not be... Now, I've tasted not cow water, but a variation of cow water and the head of tonsil. It wasn't cow water. It was a different type. It was the same idea, but it depends how efficient the system is, how good it is, how much carries over into the water. Okay, it depends how well the details of that system work. It's milk.
Because what you said before...
It depends. It's a good question. It depends when they got it from. Let's say they were making evaporated milk. They took milk, and they wanted to make it evaporated milk. You know, cans of evaporated milk. So they basically take milk and boil out the water. They boil the water out of it. That water is also called cow water. Okay, depending on where they got it from, it might be dried sugar or abundant, but it would be milkings. Okay, so the water, it's just funny. You never think, you know, we have a list of a bunch of places where water could be traced. You wouldn't think of, usually water is not on the top of the list of problems. Right. But in these kind of places, companies, especially dairies, love to be efficient. Okay, and if they have a thing that they can save water and do something with it, so if they want to wash the streets with it, that's fine. Or water the grass. But if they're going to be using it in production, then it potentially runs into these kind of problems.